That sure is magic. Jason Louvre back with us on Coast to Coast, and that's what we're going to talk about. Ancient wisdom, magic. Get ready for it. Should be very exciting. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our special guest, Jason Louvre, back with us. He was on a little more than a year ago with my colleague, Jimmy Church on Coast. Jason is a journalist, has covered surveillance, international trade, and the dark side of technology for Vice News, Boing Boing, Motherboard, and many more. And as a futurist and strategist, he has worked on Buzz Aldrin's international campaign to colonize Mars and Google's artists and machine intelligence program. He's also spent more than 20 years engaged in firsthand intensive research into the world's esoteric spiritual traditions. He has empowered thousands of people through his online school, magic.me. Jason, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, George. It's lovely to talk to you again. It's a huge honor to talk to you. I'm really happy that you have me back on.
Our dear friend, Howard Bloom, who knows you, he said he's worked a little bit with you on Buzz Aldrin's program, gives you his highest regards, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I'll have to talk to Howard. Please send him my best also.
As a matter of fact, I sent him an email yesterday. I didn't tell him you were on, but I simply said, do you know Jason Louvre? And he sent me back an email and said, yeah, great guy. You want me to get him on the show for you? And I went, a little late, Howard. He's on tomorrow night. But
we did a lot of space program work. I got to catch up with Howard. He's a real brilliant, brilliant writer.
Oh, my gosh, he really is. Hey, what do you think of Buzz Aldrin's ideas?
I think they're absolutely correct. I mean, the last I checked in with Buzz, he was saying, you know, look, we've been to the moon. You know, I've been to the moon. He said, we should really be trying to get to Mars because it's such a potent symbol. And he has very advanced, you know, engineering plans that are far beyond my pay grade for how to do it. But I think that his core point is, you know, it's such a potent symbol of national will. And I think it is something that would really galvanize people. I mean, people are fighting now over the silliest things. I think that something like that could really bring people together. And it's exciting. And the idea that we can, you know, frankly, I think that colonizing Mars is probably one of our only hopes as a species, just because we're going to need more, we're going to need more space. And Mars is the place to do it. And we need a new adventure. You know, the human race is not at its best when we don't have an adventure, so I'm all for it.
And ironically, Jason, there are some who believe that the Martians came here and may have helped seed us originally.
Yes, you just never know. I mean, people are funny, right? I mean, you look around, it's like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of wacky alien in all of us.
How would you categorize yourself? What would you say you are? What's your specialty?
It's really hard. I like to. I mean, I'm an author, right? I'm a writer. You know, writers get to do and explore all kinds of crazy stuff, and then report back to everyone and write about it. So that's what I am. You know, I'm a writer, but you know, like you summarized there, I've gotten myself into all kinds of crazy adventures, and certainly esoteric spirituality, magic, hermeticism, whatever you want to call it, has been one of my big obsessions for my whole life. And the reason it's been an obsession has been because I'm fascinated with the idea of how can people be better, you know, not, you know, how can people be more intelligent? How can people become more human in a sense, you know, become fully alive? Because my whole life growing up, I was, you know, I felt like people were just kind of going through the motions, and I still feel that way, unfortunately. I think that I really love people, and I love humanity, and I would love to see humanity switched all the way on and doing exciting things with its time on Earth, like exploring space, you know, getting off Earth.
Yep.
And, you know, we face so many problems, and yet it's ironic, George, we have more power. I mean, you want to talk about magic. We have more magical powers given to us by technology right now than any other time in history. We can literally do almost anything with technology, and yet people are more miserable and cynical than ever. I just don't get it. I think that people, people have upgraded their technology, but as I say, they need to upgrade their self-aware next.
Oh, they should embrace this technology as a gift, you know?
Absolutely. You know, it allows us to talk with, you know, a million people. It allows, you know, you can have a device in your phone which will bring anything you want to your door from Amazon Prime. You know, it's like, and yet people are still finding reasons to be miserable. And I think that I don't blame people for this. I just think that it speaks to something in our culture where we have, again, we have all this technology has progressed so fast, but we're still kind of living medieval lives in a sense. We haven't upgraded our own intelligence, our own personalities, but yet we have all the technologies to do these things in the sense of hermeticism, meditation, neurolinguistic programming, all this stuff. We have all of the esoteric techniques or the psychological techniques for becoming fully switched on, fully alive, fully awake, hyper-intelligent beings. And yet people, I guess they don't have access to it or they're not doing it, but that's where I've said to myself, okay, well, maybe this is where I come in. Let's ship some good technology to people to upgrade their self-aware.
I'm so amazed by the technology of sending pictures via smartphone to smartphone, for example. I mean, it's amazing how that works, and it's there instantly. You know, if we could see the signals going back and forth of everybody sending everybody a text message, for example, I bet they'd be lines all over the place, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. I mean, there's something like a billion hours of video uploaded to YouTube and Facebook every day.
Every day.
It's unfathomable. Now the whole world is coming online, and it's crazy. You know, I if you go back to the early 20th century and you read these grimoires and books on magic and theosophical books and things like this, they're all talking about action at a distance and telepathy and sharing minds and group minds and mind over matter. It's like, well, the technology does all this stuff for us, you know. So it's almost like I feel that the metaphors of magic in a way are kind of great for dealing with our current world where people don't really have a map.
We're with Jason Louv. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He also has a book out called John Dee and the Empire of Angels. Jason, when I think of magic in the old days, I would think of David Copperfield. It's much more than that, isn't it?
Absolutely. Although I love David Copperfield as well, you know. I think that, well, yeah, I mean, just to be basic, you know, stage magic is about producing illusions on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Real magic, or magic with a K, is all about causing transformation in consciousness. It's about changing your consciousness and altering your consciousness to have spiritual experiences. And I think if I could express that even more simply, I would call, instead of magic, I would say practical spirituality, because we often have the idea that spirituality is about something that you believe, or if you believe it, or if you believe in this person, then life will be good. But at least in my experience, it's not quite like that. Spirituality, I think, is a skill that has to be learned and trained just like anything else, like playing golf, right? Or learning to swim, or learning to play the guitar. It's a skill. You know, there's so many components to it, for instance, meditation and yoga postures and things like this and prayer, all this. You know, these are skills that need to be trained, and it's always been like that. Even if you go to the Catholic Church, you know, the Jesuits are the same. You know, that you look at the exercises of Loyola. If you look at the real intense inner core of any world religion, you find people who are deeply engaged in very, very intense exercises and practice and monastic practices. And these are practices that I think people need. And in fact, they can be undertaken without any dogma, without believing any religion. If you meditate for half an hour a day, an hour a day, or if you do yogic breathing exercises or any of these things, it doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter what your religious background is. You're going to have intense spiritual experiences. Now, what language you put on them probably is going to depend on your cultural background, but anybody can do this stuff. And you know, enlightenment is easy in a sense. It requires a series of practices. And so I think that humanity needs this more than ever, particularly in a non-religious context.
We have
nuclear weapons. You know, we need to be wising up a little bit. So.
In all these years, Jason, you may have been the only person to bring up the Jesuits, which I find to be just fantastic. I went to a Jesuit college, University of Detroit at the time, and that's a sect within the Roman Catholic Church where they are literally scholars. They're brilliant at what they do.
together, and that must have been intense, right? I mean, they're not joking around, right?
No, they do not fool around. They are serious people in their studies and everything else, and very powerful. I think much more powerful than we even believe.
I completely agree. I have a lot of respect for it. I think that if you look at, you know, the series of exercises they do is called the Exercises of Loyola, I think, and you know, it's magical exercises. If you read what they're doing, you know, they spend huge amounts of time, you know, basically visualizing scenes from the Bible, the crucifixion, things like this, building them up mentally. It's no different from, for instance, what Tibetan monks do. And it's no different from what's done in what's generally called the Western esoteric tradition. And I have a lot of respect for it. I mean, they're serious yogic practices, in a sense.
Well, you look at the word magic, and then, as you mentioned, the word M-A-G-I-C-K, magic. That K at the end of magic changes the meaning when you look at the two words together, doesn't it?
It changes the, what's the second word?
The words of magic with the C, magic with the C-K.
Oh, yes, right. Well, magic with a K is what we're talking about, you know, the technology of changing consciousness, and magic with a C is stage magic, usually, or just used colloquially. So magic with a K, capital M with a K. Yes, it's goofy. I'm totally aware that it's kind of goofy. I kind of like that it's goofy. You know, it's good to have a sense of humor.
It looks mystical, doesn't it?
But it looks mystical. You know, that's what it's all about.
Now, there's black magic and white magic. What's the difference?
Good question. So I would define it like this. I think that white magic is living in line with what your true will is, living in line with what you truly are meant to be doing in this life, and generally doing things to help other people and to see beyond yourself. And I think if you ask the question at all times, how can I benefit humanity as a whole, you really can't go wrong. Black magic, I would say, is really, first of all, it's really not nearly as scary as people think it is because it's so ineffective. But it largely, I would define it as people using these technologies to fulfill just kind of temporary selfish needs. Luckily, most people grow out of that phase if they do go through that. But that's how I would define it. And I think that if you do things altruistically and you have the greater good of everyone in mind, you can't really go wrong.
A lot of it depends on who the person is who's performing the magic routine or the ritual too, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why so much of training in magic is ethical and is meant to transform the ethics of the individual in a positive way. Certainly yoga is very similar. Yoga is a big part of magic, the traditional meditation yoga, not so much the Bendi yoga, although that's good too. But, you know, if you look at yoga or Buddhism, the first thing that they do is they drill in ethics to the person who's practicing it. Yoga has yamas and niyamas, which means do's and don'ts. The Buddhists have the five or more precepts. And so the first thing that's done in magic is, and certainly the way that I teach it, is there are very, very strict ethical guidelines put in place. And those largely have to do with not harming other people and with using it for undertaking one's own spiritual evolution, first mm-hmm. and foremost.
Now, I had a witch on the program last night, Jason, and she does not perform curses. She was what we would call a good witch, but she'll do spells for good purposes. Would you categorize black-white magic as something that witchcraft would undertake?
Well, I think that it's hard to speak for individuals, and witchcraft is kind of a different path in a sense, but certainly my experience of witchcraft is, you know, they're very much along the same lines. I think they probably would not, most witchcraft practitioners would completely agree with what I just said. I don't think there's really that much of a difference. And they're also very clear about these things because I think that anyone who engages in this stuff finds out very quickly that, you know, what you put out comes back to you, you know, so.
Karma.
Absolutely. Instant karma. So,
now, do you practice magic yourself, or are you primarily the journalist behind it?
No, I mean, I wouldn't be a full journalist if I didn't, you know, and if I couldn't talk about this stuff if I didn't do it. No, I mean,
So you dabble in it.
Very seriously. Well, I've spent close to a quarter century doing this stuff now. You know, I've traveled all over the world, learned from all these different spiritual traditions. I trained as a shaman in the Himalayas. I learned from Sufis, Masons, all these different spiritual traditions. I learned from a lot of great teachers like Genesis Peorage and several others. And I mean, I've been completely immersed in it for my entire life, pretty much as a solitary practitioner, but also with groups. And the reason that I immersed myself in it so much is because I wanted to find out what was BS and what wasn't.
Right.
And let's be honest, a lot of it is BS. A lot of it is kind of new agey.
Oh, you get phony mediums that are out there, phony everything. You got to be careful.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, absolutely. Particularly with spiritualism. But I really wanted to find out what's the stuff that is really real. And what I came out with on the other end was there's a lot of stuff that is not only completely valid, but, you know, it's, you know, scientifically backable. I mean, they can take, for instance, meditation is the best example. I don't think anyone would dispute the effects that meditation, positive effects and physical effects that meditation has on people. You know, they take Tibetan monks and put them in MRIs and their brains are different. The structure of their brain.
Exactly. Their blood pressure goes down, all kinds of things.
Yeah, we could all use that, right?
Yeah.
So I, you know, and that's the stuff that I'm most interested in, which is the stuff that, you know, I could put to Scientific American, you know, and say, and, you know, they're not going to be able to disagree with it. Now, yes, there's goofy language around it, which I use out of deference to the tradition. And I like the word magic because it suggests that anything is possible, which I think is a good suggestion to give people. I mean, the reason that I practice so much is because I wanted to find out what's real. And a lot of it is very, very real and very potent and utterly life transforming. And that's, I wouldn't be, you know, putting so much time into promoting it otherwise if I didn't think that it could be profoundly transformative and healing for the world, frankly.
I was going to say, Jason, primarily, what do you think magic is used for?
Enlightenment. If it's done right.
Personal enlightenment. Question. Yeah.
Personal enlightenment. That's it. It's used for awakening. It's used for waking up in the dream. I mean, just like you would wake up you would have a lucid dream by realizing that you were dreaming while you were dreaming. Magic allows you to realize you're dreaming while you're awake and awake from the dream, because most of us are asleep all day long and just operating on autopilot. Magic snaps you out of that and reminds you, really, it's a reminder that anything is possible. But we fall into the trance of thinking that it's not. We hypnotize ourselves into thinking that everything is, you know, locked down and we don't have any options.
Now, generally, when people are beginning to perform magic with a K, what are some of the techniques they use to get into this? I mean, are they chanting? What are they doing?
There's a ton. I mean, really anything you can think of. Magic is the other reason I use magic is because it's a real catch-all for basically any spiritual or esoteric practice you can think of. But basically what we're going for here is any technique that will get you into an altered state of consciousness. So the ones you mentioned, absolutely, chanting, fasting is a good one, spinning. But the ones that I tend to like most of all is primarily meditation. And by meditation, I don't mean listening to like a guided meditation on YouTube, although that can be nice. But generally, meditation is the practice of turning your mind off. So it involves being able to hold yoga postures for long periods of time. It involves slowing your breath down to at least 2 minutes per breath. And, you know, there's a real science to it. It's thousands of years old.
2 minutes per breath? Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
hold on for a sec, Jace. We're at the break. We'll come back in more. That was a fast segment. We've got more coming and calls with Jason next hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Jason Louv, as we talk about magic and all kinds of magic indeed. What are some of the famous individuals who have been interested in using magic, Jason, over the years?
There have been literally hundreds. I'm constantly finding new ones, and it's people a lot more famous than you'd think. Let's see. David Bowie is always comes to mind. John Lennon. Elvis Presley, very interested in it.
Elvis, really?
Absolutely. he was big into the occult. He was big into theosophy as well. He was very, very serious with it.
Both Clintons, Bill and Hillary, and also Donald Trump have been fascinated with it, surprisingly enough. So many royals, Queen Elizabeth, a lot of scientists, shockingly enough, Albert Einstein, fascinated with alchemy, Robert Oppenheimer, and a lot of people, even now, Elon Musk apparently has a great interest in meditation and chakras and things like that. So it's some of the people you would least expect are, you know, and a lot of people that have just shaped history. I'm constantly finding new ones.
Has magic been misunderstood or misinterpreted by so many people?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's very, very rarely been, you know, not misinterpreted. You know, magic, of course, calls up all of the Hammer horror, you know, all the Hollywood stuff.
Yes, and they do a good job with it too.
Yeah, you know, and you know, the reality is much less romantic. You know, I think that what magic actually tends to look like is just somebody meditating for long periods of time. And it's much closer to, again, what you would expect Tibetan monks to do, where, you know, they're meditating, but it's kind of colorful, and they have, you know, ritual items that are there to focus their minds into certain directions. But magic is always, you know, really up until the current time period, I would say, or at least until the 20th century, it was always seen as something to be afraid of. And a lot of people have speculated that the reason that magic got such a bad rap was because people wanted to keep it for themselves. Traditionally, it was held by nobility, the royal family, certainly in England, and the nobility in England, you know, has a long history with this stuff. Of course, going, you know, John Dee, who I wrote the book about, is a big part of that. And certainly in Western culture, if not others, it's kind of been this closely guarded thing of the elite. And for that reason, I suspect that there may have been a little bit of, muddying the water, or kind of some negative PR done to kind of scare people away from it. Because the reality is that it is not only tremendously empowering for people, but it also tends to wake them up out of whatever control structures they're living in. And that's, of course, quite frightening to the powers that be, whatever the powers that be happen to be in any given period. So I would suspect that it's been given negative publicity for a reason, which is to keep people away from it. But since we now live in the age of the Internet, all of that has fallen by the wayside. And I think that magic now is phenomenally popular, particularly it really began to become popular in the 20s. It was extremely popular with the baby boomers in the 60s, and now, and even more so, I think, with millennials.
Sure. It skews much younger now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I think that part of that is, you know, kids grew up with The Craft or Harry Potter, things like this. So they have positive imprints on it instead of negative ones. Because of media, and also just because of the Internet, they have access to the information. They can, you know, for good and bad, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. But for instance, they can take my classes online, or, find, you know, books that couldn't be found easily before. And so we really live in a renaissance period for this stuff. A lot of people talk about, oh, the golden age of magic was, you know, thousands of years ago. I don't think so. I think now is the golden age of magic, because we have all the information, and we can look at them. We can look at this information with the skeptical eye of modern individuals and clearly see, okay, what's valid? What was superstition? What was exaggeration? You know, what are, for instance, the most core techniques of meditation that really work? And can we leave to the wayside the stuff that is clearly superstition? And I think that out of that, we're going to get something very exciting. If you consider that alchemy gave birth to chemistry, and astrology gave birth to astronomy, well, what is ceremonial magic and yoga and the techniques of altering the brain? What kind of real science is that going to give way to in 50 years, 100 years? I think, you know, probably the, you know, perhaps the keystone of it all.
And Jason, when people practice magic, what are they tapping into? in order to start accomplishing the things that are accomplished? What is out there? What is that?
Well, it's what's out there and what's in there. And I would first of all say that what magic does is it taps into the deepest layers of yourself. It is a journey into self-realization, self-exploration, and it allows you to go deep into the unconscious layers of the mind and the core of yourself. I mean, people talk about enlightenment. Well, what is enlightenment? Enlightenment is discovering the fundamental core of who you are, like the atom of the individual or beyond, perhaps. And so it's an inward journey. But as we say in magic, as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
At least perceptually for human beings, it appears that, you know, inside and outside, at least for magic people, tend to be the same thing. And they tend to interact and they tend to mirror each other, so that I can say absolutely that as one goes on the inward journey and as one becomes more and more integrated and awakened human being, life gets a lot better, you know, because the universe responds to you in a much more positive way because you're not conflicted. Most human beings are bundles of confliction. They're like tangles of cords, and magic untangles that, and so magic allows one to experience the free-flowing energy of existence, to put it simply, and life just gets magical, for lack of a better way of putting it. The more enlightened the more integrated one becomes, life just gets better on its own. It's almost like the universe responds positively to it, and that is the core of what magic really is. It's not, you know, doing spells to get something. It's tapping into yourself so deeply that you're tapping into, you know, the beneficial forces of the universe, let's say. It's opening up the whole thing, the whole universe, like a flower, and allowing your life to blossom because you're tapping into the wellspring of truth, of existence, of yourself, of the universe, which is all the same thing. And a lot of this comes without dogma. It comes without, you know, it just happens. There's no, you know, you're getting the experience. Instead of reading about it secondhand, if you read sacred texts or if you go to churches and things like this, you're getting it secondhand. People are telling you about an experience that somebody else had. Oh, so, you know, Moses saw the burning bush. Well, this is a spiritual experience that somebody else had. And magic gives you the tools to actually have the experience yourself. And when you have the experience yourself, you discover that actually there's really nothing supernatural about it. It's just fully living. It's fully maximizing the experience of human existence. It's fully becoming alive, and nothing could be better, I don't think. And that's why I'm so passionate about teaching it.
Do you think magic enhances religion or detracts from it?
Well, both. I mean, I think that religion is basically, religion is people telling stories about people who did magic and hoping to repeat their successes. But I think that in some ways, you know, I all of the religions of the world are profound and sacred and teach utterly true things about the human experience. And without a lot of times the moral scaffolding of religion, magic doesn't get so far. On the other hand, magic, I often say, it kind of shows you how the rabbit is pulled from the hat. You know, if you practice this stuff, you understand how these holy people had their experiences, and then you say, well, this is just a brain event. I'm just triggering something in my nervous system. Well, yeah, that's pretty cool, right? And so it takes the superstition out of it. And then after doing these practices, whether it's yoga or ritual or these various magical practices, you can then go back and read the Bible or the Quran or the Tao Te Ching or any of these holy books, and you have more respect, and you have more of a sense of what they were talking about. And the funny thing is also when supernatural language is used in those holy books, you understand exactly what they're talking about. So, for instance, if somebody's talking about, oh, you know, I transformed into a tiger or something like that, well, you can clearly see, oh, well, I understand what they're talking about. They're tapping into that animal state. You know, they're tapping into the animal stage of their consciousness in an altered state where they're tapping into the genetic experience of being an animal, which is you can experience in deep meditation. So these things that seem exaggerated or fanciful, ironically, and that, you know, purely atheistic or purely scientific people dismiss as fanciful claims, you can go back to and look at with magical experience and say it's like a metaphor. They're trying to describe a state of consciousness that they experienced. And that, I think, in a way, revivifies religion and makes it totally profound and meaningful in a way that is so much more relevant for modern people, because modern people are not willing to believe things on faith so much anymore. They want to know what's real for themselves. And so magic in that way is perfect for that, because it's like applying almost a scientific or at least empirical set of methods for repeating, you know, all of these, you know, all of these spiritual experiences that we read about and understanding what they actually are.
What would you say, Jason, would be the best use of magic for an individual?
Well, again, enlightenment, you know, it's all for, as it's been put in the Hermetic tradition, discovering your true will. You know, that's where you start, your true purpose for life. So many people now, despite having infinite information and infinite opportunity and infinite power to do almost anything they want with their lives, literally, I mean, that's never been possible before in history. They're so lost, and they don't know what to do, and they squander their lives pinballing from one thing to the next. So the first goal of magic is to unveil your true purpose, your true will, what you are truly here to do. And the funny thing is that you already know what that is, just that people have a funny way of distracting themselves from it and covering it up with all these, you know, distractions and entertainment and things like that, and drama and problems and all this stuff we like to fill our lives with. The true purpose, the true will, is where divinity meets humanity. And in the past, in our culture, we had a one-size-fits-all approach to spirituality, which is that if you just believe in the church or whatever it happens to be, then you're good. It's a one-size-fits-all. But reality is messy. You know, it's not one-size-fits-all. Everyone has a different role to play and a different path to live. And that is sacred and must be lived out, similar to the Hindu concept of dharma. We each have a role to play, and we can't shirk that just to go meditate in a cave. Spirituality for 99.9% of people is lived out in the world by fulfilling one's path, by fulfilling one's dharma and one's duties to society, at least until generally the age of retirement, when people are free to fully pursue spirituality full time, which is a really beautiful thing. But that's the first goal of magic, is to tap into what the universe truly wants for you, what your true will is. It proceeds from there into, you know, more full enlightenment stages. But that is a really active way to look at it. And I like looking at it that way, because one thing I really want to emphasize is that this is not a path of being a monastic. It's not a path of meditating in a cave. It's a path of being fully active in the world. And that's why it's magic and not, you know, monastic meditation or something like that, because it's about action in the world and living a good life.
When we meditate for things or dream for things, better jobs, a relationship, whatever, is that also part of what magic is?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a great definition of magic, or a great explanation of certain magic techniques. At 110%, where the rubber really hits the road is where you transition from. You know, I think these things are widespread in our culture now. People talk about manifesting, all of this. I think that when the rubber really hits the road and when it really becomes capital M magic is when you take the extra step of saying, okay, well, if I can meditate to focus my life on achieving something, or if I can, you know, use dreaming techniques to do that or whatever it happens to be, well, what should I truly be doing with my life? Because practical magic is easy. If you want to do magic to get something, if you want to get money or if you want to get a job opportunity or a partner or anything like this, that's the easiest thing in the world, I'm here to tell you right now. What's hard is dealing with that if it's not what was truly right for you, right? Anyone who's been in a relationship that was not truly right for them knows exactly what I'm talking about, or a job that they thought they wanted in the moment, and then they get it, and then they're like, oh my God, how do I get out of this job? You know, I think these are pretty universal experiences, right? So that's like, you know, be careful what you wish for. Well, okay. So it's easy to get what you wish for. The real question is, how do you know that you're wishing for the right thing? And that's why I'm saying that, you know, magic is the process of, you know, we could say enlightenment or self-realization, or broadly speaking, at least self-inquiry, to get to the core of who you truly are and what you are truly meant to be doing in this life, which might be something radically different, by the way, than what you've been doing your whole life. Because a lot of people, you know, they go through life doing what they think other people want, what has other people have told them to do, what they think makes other people happy, or they live life for others. You know, that's why, again, why the retirement years are so critical when the kids are out of the house and, you know, where traditionally throughout, you know, for thousands of years, that has been seen in so many cultures as the time when true spiritual practice can really begin. Now you may be saying, like, you know, who are you to be saying, you know, like, I'm 38, you know, it's like, who are you to be talking about this stuff? It's like, well, I'm not anyone, you know, I don't know anything about this, but the traditions are thousands of years old and they're unflinching and unchanging. And I'm currently a pretty good, I would say, custodian of those traditions.
I would think so too. Jason, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about magic and we'll take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.